Welcome to STO Cast Episode 1, dated the 18th of March. Hello everyone and welcome to this very first episode of STO Cast, starting on Line.net's very own podcast. Now, we've got a nice show coming up, but first I'd like to thank someone, and that person is GT. He wrote the intro music you just heard, and he also wrote some other music for this podcast, which you'll hear later. And additionally, we'll play a piece of him at the end of this podcast. So now I'd like to introduce the other people who are on this show with me, and those people are John, also known as Demosthenes on the boards. Hello, John.
Hey, Jasper.
And the other person is Ashley, also known as Aiden on the boards. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to point out, actually, that both John and Jasper are staff members at STO Nuts, and I'm actually just a community member.
Oh, just a community member.
I am just a community member. Yes, I am.
Well, it's good to have you on board, Ash.
Thank you very much.
I'd also like to draw a bit of attention to a couple of other podcasts that we're joining, and that's Argus Array and Hailing Frequency. They both cover Star Trek gaming as well as Star Trek Online, so we're not the only people here with opinions about this game.
Links we mention here and images we're talking about can all be found in our show notes, which in turn can be found at www.stocast.net. Lastly, this show consists of two parts. The first part is going to be a little bit of discussion about the news, and the second part is going to be an interview. Ooh! But before that, we're going to discuss the news. So, what news do we have, guys?
Alright, so the first thing that I'd like to talk about, guys, is this new section we've got on the website, the Reference Library. Just for people who have no idea what I'm talking about, it's a new section that we've set up with Perpetual. And it's basically a place where their developers can come along and they can post requests and people can go out, find them pictures, images, references. Pictures, images.
People and references.
People can go out and find source material for them. What do you guys think of the section?
I love it.
I love it as well.
You know, I think it's gone really well so far. There have only been three or four requests, but, you know, we've seen a good response to them. And obviously there's a thread where Darren requested some space images, and people delivered quite a few of them. And as a kind of little reward, he posted some of the examples of what he'd done with the images. And obviously one of the images was a picture of the galaxy, and it seemed to indicate what playable space will be.
Yeah, with the different colours. You had the blue for noobs, up to reds for level 60s, and, well, obviously not level 60s, but...
But, I mean, well, that's a point, actually. It did seem to reveal, you know, that there will be a level system within the game, which was certainly something we didn't know about before.
Yeah.
And in turn, it showed, obviously, that we're going to be able to play in both the alpha and beta quadrants, which I think some people are very happy about, because for the longest time we thought it was just going to be a beta quadrant-based game.
Also, just thinking about this actually, did you know the Romulans are beta quadrant native? This
yes,
could
I knew
mean
that.
There's Romulans in there.
Oh, I'd hope so. I really hope so. You know, because yeah. I want to go up against the Romulans, to be honest.
I do too.
I think it will be very hard for them to leave them out as an enemy. I mean, they're one of the biggest enemies in Star Trek, and I don't think they'll simply ignore the Romulans. That would be a miss.
All right, so let's talk about the TrekMovie.com interview, because that was a bit of a surprise, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I liked that a lot, that interview there. The most interesting thing for me was, you know, the reveal that Star Trek Online is moving away from the photorealistic. So moving away basically from the couple of screenshots we've seen, and going for a more stylized look. What do you guys think of that?
It scares me.
Yeah, I think that word stylized is a word that scares a few people, because people jump to conclusions, really. They presume straight away that it means I mean, in essence, that it means World of Warcraft cartoon graphics. That's something we've seen people...
Well, there's nothing saying against that either at the moment. So it could very well happen, but I personally don't think it will happen.
Yeah, I don't think it will be happening either, especially with the concept art that was recently revealed, which we'll talk a little bit more about later. You know, by stylized, I think it just means they've really give it, you know, just an extra edge, really. It's not photorealistic, but it's not cartoony either.
I guess what, there's part of this little bit of disappointment within me, because with all these new next generation games coming out, especially ones being shown at GDC and stuff like that, they've all been super, like, highly realistic graphics with shading and everything like that. And then to hear the word stylized, I don't know, it just comes across to me as they don't want to go that far with the graphics.
I think something can have very good and realistic graphics and at the same time be stylized.
This is true.
There's a lot of conjecture, really. It's a simple statement that we need to see more. I think we'll probably need to see the characters and more of the scenery before we can make any kind of detailed analysis of what's going on there.
Yeah.
So, again, in the Trek movie interview, Darren said something that initially sparked some fears amongst people like myself, really. He said that the Klingons are now considered part of the Federation. Just to clear up, though, for people who don't know, he did come back to our boards and clarify that he might have misspoken there, and that the Klingons may well not be members of the Federation. We'll have to wait for Mike Stemmel to come back from his honeymoon, apparently.
I'd like them to be put outside of the Federation and, yeah, you know, kind of Worf-like change officers, or I don't know.
Yeah, there are plenty of opportunities in the story for them to present reasons why there might be Klingons serving in Starfleet. I don't necessarily think they need to have the Klingon Empire integrated with the Federation. And I think if they did that, they'd have a lot of explaining to do.
And just to say, Jasper said Worf-like, which is a big problem with me again, because I always have problems with these things. It's Worf was like a unique character, like Data was and like B'Elanna Torres was. They're unique, which made them interesting. Now, if they're going to be, every second character is going to be like that, the whole character that was built up in a series is going to be trivialised.
Well, yeah, that's why I don't think they'll actually go for that kind of integration. Yeah. I'm confident they'll come up with a good reason. Well, there's a couple of other things in the interview that I quickly want to just get out of the way. First things first, we kind of got a release date from them. Apparently, STO's release will be around the time that Star Trek 11 comes out, which, as we know, is the 25th of December 2008, Christmas Day, which is a good 18 months away. What do you think of that?
Not surprised and happy. Means more time to develop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an advocate of a nice long beta period, ensure that we get it tested and it makes for a better game.
Also, very, very good point is, if right now, so it's 2007 now, isn't it? We've got the 8800 GTX and that kind of graphics card.
Yeah.
Imagine what's going to be 2 years, and that what's brand new today is going to be completely bog standard then. So
we'll see. I'm sure they'll keep that in mind.
Oh, it's going to be good.
One final thing I'll say about Trek movie. They alluded to having separate servers for roleplay. I'm sure some people might be happy about that.
They did. I totally missed that.
Yeah, they did, yeah. All right, so in the Trek movie interview, as well as in some coverage from Destructoid.com, we heard about a new race called the Bimphalians, or, as some people have been calling them on the boards, Ash.
The Blimpies.
The Blimps. These are supposed to be, well, people are assuming these are the new menacing bad guys. We don't actually know that. I'll make that point. All we know is that they're apparently a new scary enemy. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're the main enemy. But people are saying Bimphalians doesn't sound scary.
It's kind of, I mean, with all those titles now, Bimphalians and Sacagawea class, if that's an indication for what's to come, then I'd better start briefing up my linguistics.
Yeah, a lot of people are trying to suggest new names on the boards, and that's interesting. One comment everyone seems to make is that, you know, really scary bad guys seem to have very short, single-syllable names. That leads us on to the GDC coverage, really, the Game Developers Conference last week.
There was some nice concept art in there.
Oh, there was some great revelations, really. In terms of the art, I mean, over on MMORPG.com, we got, three new pieces of concept art and a really nice version of the logo that we've seen before. What did you guys think of what we saw?
Well, most important one for me was definitely the away mission ones, because from what it looks like, it's not just showing combat. Because a while ago, they said something about archaeology and stuff like that. I think it's on their old website, and they had the archaeology departments and stuff like that. And it looks like they had tricorders and stuff like that. So it's maybe looking towards it's not just being focused on combat, hopefully.
That's a really beautiful piece of art as well, isn't it? You know, the scene looks wonderful. And again, if that's representative of in-game, obviously this is art, but if we can see environments like that in the game, that's very exciting.
I also like the new ship design a lot. It seems to be, you know, a little bit of combination of different stuff we know.
The Sacagawea?
Yeah, Sacagawea. And I really like the whole detail and the technical stuff on the hull and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of confusion about what exactly the function of the ship is. I mean, I think the common conclusion now is that it's a runabout of sorts. It's about the same length. It seems to have only a single deck. And of course, though, it has those sweeping out warp nacelles that look very sexy.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I completely have nothing to say about it.
Well, just tell us you like it. I'm sure you like it, right?
I like it.
So there was also the piece of art that revealed a space station, and in that art there was a very small ship, about which some confusion arise, because MMORPG.com referred to it as the Enterprise E.
It was obviously not the Enterprise E.
No. Darren did come to our boards again, and he clarified that he didn't, when he spoke to those, he did refer to it as their Enterprise, but he didn't actually mean it is the Enterprise. He just meant it's Perpetual's flagship of the game. So, you know, it's representative of that kind of ship, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's the Enterprise.
Yeah, and it's more the evolution of basically the whole genre, not the genre, the franchise, evolution of the franchise.
And really, that picture we saw of the space station was great as well. If space looks anything like that in the game, then again, it's very exciting, because it's going to be lovely.
It definitely will look lovely, hopefully less blue.
Well, you know, maybe that could be something to do with the sector that it's located in. Perhaps the star's blue. Who knows?
You can't have a blue star.
Of course you can.
They're always white.
No, you can have blue stars, but we'll not argue about that. I promise you, you can have blue stars.
Well, there was one other thing which I found interesting. I don't know where exactly, but somewhere it said that actually two races were gone. I mean, they were talking about, apart from the Klingons, there's going to be six other races. So that makes seven. And we
thought there were going to be nine. Yeah,
that was Trek movie.
Yeah, and so who do we think's gone?
I reckon Tellarites.
You see, I think it's going to be, they're going to sacrifice races that don't offer much visually.
No, the Bajorans are in.
They're humans, apart from their nose ridges.
You see, I've seen Ash argue on the boards. He's said, well, humans are humans. Vulcans are humans with dodgy ears. And
Klingons are humans with turtle heads.
Yeah, but Vulcans have a very distinct character from humans.
They don't have any character.
Bajorans are just like humans, really. They're passionate. They're, you know, even though they're a little bit more religious, and I think I could agree with you, they've got quite this defined culture that we saw all through DS9, and it'd be fun to see that.
Yeah, I think one thing, the religious thing, I think that's something that's very hard to put in the game, but it might be very good to roleplay. So I think an option which I think might work is that you choose a human, and then I guess you can have some customizations, like physical customization, the eyebrow thick, and stuff like that. That you might be able to, you know, choose a Bajoran or Thrill for that matter face instead of the standard human one. And apart from that, the game mechanics would all be the same and stuff.
You see, that's a really nice idea, actually. I like the idea that role players, you know, can still choose to make their human character look Bajoran or Trill or like any of the other, you know, semi-humanoid races. Because, then you satisfy all. You can have seven distinct races in terms of visuals, but then still allow people who want to roleplay the opportunity to do that. What do you think, Ash? Would you be satisfied with that?
I would be satisfied with that, but I just had a burst of inspiration. Bajorans, highly cultured, and one of the biggest key aspects is the fact that until the Kardashians, they weren't a violent race and a very artistic, architectural, scientific. That would be the perfect crafter's race.
Perhaps, yeah.
Beyond all the others, because Vulcans got 3x human strength, Klingons have got 2x human strength, Andorians about the same. They're all, like, really strong ones. But there isn't really any intelligent races other than the Bolians and the Bajorans.
But we don't, you know, I mean, we don't really know that. The Tellarites, for instance, if they're still playable, would not... There's so much freedom to explore with those guys. We know they're a prominent Federation race, but we've still not seen much of them. For reasons that probably amount to makeup in the show, which is not a problem in the game. You know, it probably costs a lot of money to get someone dressed up as a Tellarite in the early Star Trek, and then by the time Enterprise came around, we saw a little bit more of them when makeup was easier to do. Okay, I think that brings us to the end of our segment then. I just want to say that I'm quite excited about the next segment because I get to talk to someone really quite special. And maybe I'll get a few answers to those questions we had about the Sacagawea and other ships.
Good luck.
See you later.
Okay, until next time, guys.
Bye.
I'd like to welcome a very special guest to our show today. We're joined by John Eaves. He's a very talented designer, probably best known via his role as an illustrator on the Star Trek franchise. In case you didn't know, ships such as the Sovereign-class Enterprise-E and the Romulan Warbird from Star Trek Nemesis are a couple of examples of his handiwork. It's great to have you with us on the show, John. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you too.
Okay, I'll begin by asking, how did you come to be involved with Perpetual?
Usually do a lot of work over at Paramount outside of the Star Trek realm, and I know a lot of the guys over at licensing and in the merchandising department, and one of the guys was talking about the online game coming up, and so I started kind of pursuing it with one of the earlier guys that was working over here, and we had a pretty good rapport and started working kind of towards getting a position to work on the show or the online game. And he wound up moving on to another show. He's originally from Canada. And so he went on to that, and he goes, well, I'm going to pass on your name to one of the guys here, and that was Todd. And so we kind of had a little bit of interaction together, and we finally got to meet. And it was kind of a great privilege to be a part of the group, to come on and work with him. So it was kind of something I always wanted to do, and I had heard a lot about the online game company. I used to work in the visual effects, and all of those old shops, they're all gone now, but they were very family-oriented, and Hollywood's kind of cold in the fact that you work with people for a couple weeks, couple months, and then you never see them again. But in the early days, we'd all, no matter what the show was, would always kind of move on to the same thing, so you had a really nice collaborative friend basis that you'd work with, and this is almost exactly like that. And so everyone wants to collaborate, work together, and the ideas flow so wonderfully. And it's a great atmosphere to work in. So it's actually more fun than movies, and a lot more creative, especially with this project. So as you know, Star Trek was a very tight, regimented show. There was a certain design look that it always had to follow. A bad guy would always look like the Bird of Prey, or vice versa. But with this one, they get to kind of explore Star Trek in a world with very little boundaries. So it's definitely very science fiction.
Well, how long have you been working with Perpetual?
I started with Perpetual in July, I believe. So about 7-8 months ago.
Okay, so on the shows and the movies, you seem to work on much more than designing just the hulls and exteriors of starships. Is the same true for STO?
So far on STO, I'm pretty much just doing exterior ship designs. They have kind of a talented artist in every kind of realm. They have one guy that kind of handles characters, another one that does costumes. Ryan here does a lot of the landscapes and kind of the overall view of just about everything. He'll do like the ships, kind of set the tone of what things are going to look like. I got Rob Brown that does a lot of the kind of the exteriors and the landscapes and the planetary stuff, and just an incredible base of talent people. So everyone kind of has their own little area that they really specialize in, and we all kind of get together and work out some great ideas.
So you were comparing working on the show and the game. Would you say there are any significant similarities or differences between video game development and, say, the later Star Trek films, which utilized extensive CGI?
From a design point of view, They're almost identical, where you basically have a rough idea. You'll like to have a ship name and kind of a rough size, and you'll just come up with concepts and ideas, and the approval process is kind of the same. This is great. We like this piece or that part, and you'll re-sketch it and combine the things that you like and kind of work it out from there. So as far as a design sense goes, they're almost identical. The approval process on the video games is a bit broader because, you know, being that it is in CG, there aren't as many restrictions as it used to be with the movies when they had a practical model. Anything that would have motion was a major event because you'd have to mechanically design the model to do something. But with the CG world, you can do so many more things, and it's not a budgetary concern at that point.
Right. Well, I mean, that leads on to another question I had about designing a concept, really. Do you typically come up with an idea and pitch it to the guys at Perpetual, or do they come to you with an outline for what they want and then you just come up with a gadget?
Yeah, Ryan and Todd have kind of come up with kind of a sheet, kind of a grid sheet of what they want to see. They'll have a variety of say, Federation ships, and they'll start out with, like, the biggest class, what it does. Is it a battleship? Is it a family ship, exploration ship, science ship, what have you, and they'll maybe want two or three of each of these different types of starships. And so based on that and the size, you'll start working out ideas like what would science architecture look versus a battleship. And so once we get kind of some concepts that everybody likes, then you do kind of a hard line version of the drawing and then color version, and then it gets once it's all done, it gets blocked off, and then you move on to the next series of stuff.
And how long does that typically take to come up with one concept and go from starting to finishing it?
Usually the concepts on this, I think the most we did on one ship was maybe three or four passes. And they speak so well about what their ideas are. It's pretty easy to design from what they're talking about. And Ryan will interject, and I'll send a sketch over, and he'll do a lot of overlays on it. He goes, "This is nice. This, what do you say? We try this." And being that he's working in the Photoshop, he can just do like an overlay on top of what I'm working on, so we can interact and do a lot of the design work together.
Right. So, talking of Ryan, the recently revealed Sacagawea class, I hope I said that correctly, is a new take on designs that we've seen on televised Star Trek, really. There seems to be a lot more technical detail around the hull. It's, you know, there's quite a high level of detail in there. What are your thoughts on this evolution in ship design? Where's it going?
Oh, I love it. you know, with the TVs and the movie show.
Yes.
They'd get it. Sometimes you would never get the design where you'd want it to go. You do four or five designs, and almost every time they'd pick the one that you hate. And then you'd have to flesh out the details and work out the final concept that way. But working in this environment, everyone is pretty much an artist, and in their own right, and if not, they're a fan as well. And so what you love about the Star Trek designs from the movies and shows, you get to take it a couple extra steps further and really flesh out what you really like and kind of leave what you don't like behind. And with what Ryan had done with the Sacagawea, he kind of took some favorite elements. You got a little bit of Defiant, you got a little bit of Runabout, you got a little bit of everything there. So he took a lot of his favorite elements and really turned it into a much nicer ship.
So talking of the art direction, we've heard that STO's taken a turn towards being a little more stylized in its art rather than photorealistic. Has this had an effect on what and how you design?
Not really. The ships basically are very either Federation or Klingon or whatever the race is going to be, but where the really beautiful stylization has come is with the characters and the creatures. And I think it's a much better turn than the photorealistic. And it adds a lot of a character. It's almost like when you see someone online and they kind of present themselves as someone who they're not, like the alter ego. And you'll see like really stout kind of Federation officers and real sassy kind of Federation gals. These fantastic characters and creatures. And one of the artists here, Hyung, is I don't know his last name. What is Hyung's last name? Hyung Nam. He's one of the concept guys for all the characters and stuff. He's doing some fantastic characterizations of the old creatures that you know from the older episodes of the shows, and has really brought them into some fantastic designs.
Yes, that sounds excellent. We've heard the Gorn will be in there, so definitely looking forward to seeing those.
Yeah, that one's definitely one of my favorites that he's done.
So, just building on that question, really, we assume that some existing ships are in line for inclusion, such as the Sovereign class. Have these been affected by the change in art direction? Obviously, you say the stylization has had more of an effect on how characters will look. So will ships be recreated faithfully?
Hold on one second. Are you recreating the Sovereign? As far as the stuff I've seen, they redid the Warbird from the Valdor, and it was a brilliant recreation of it. And they had done a lot of that before I came on, and they did it mostly from what little reference was available. And the modeler did such a fantastic job that it's almost his own ship. So it's definitely holds true to the lines of what you saw in the film, but he's kind of stylized it to be his own as well, and did a really fantastic job of interpreting and modeling the final ship.
Yeah, super. I mean, that's something else I was going to ask, actually. Have you had a chance to realize any of your existing work from the franchise within the game?
No, actually, the Valdor is the only one that I've seen realized into the game.
So, in Nemesis, you designed the Romulan ships, the Valdor and Scimitar, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to explore more of the Romulan Empire, or indeed other races outside of the Federation, in designing?
Enterprise kind of opened the door for a lot of that, so it was kind of fun to take back a lot of my favorites. Like the Tholian was always a favorite ship, and Enterprise kind of opted that opportunity to take those favorite ships and kind of take them back a couple hundred years and kind of redesign them a little bit, trying to keep faithful to the designs that Matt Jeffries and Hua Chang had done, and but kind of not necessarily updating them, but kind of retroing the designs a little bit. So it was always great fun to get to do those ships.
Okay, so in STO, we're assuming that players are going to have some freedom to, you know, scrutinize every aspect of their starship, maybe spin the camera around and have a look at it from every different angle. Does this change your approach to designing ships at all?
Like I was saying, when I first worked in visual effects, everything was about a camera point of view, and I never thought much about the way things were designed till I saw things be put on film. And many times, a beautiful model that was built from like a one point of view drawing only looked good from that point of view, and when it would pass through the camera, there would be the fact that it would look too heavy or out of balance, or it wouldn't flow right when it would pass by. And so it would take a lot of tricks from the cameraman to make a lot of ships look better than they really were. And it was kind of an education, hidden education in a way, that once you start seeing it from a camera's point of view, you start designing around wanting to make every angle look good or have a proper balance. And the same goes true with the video game, because you're going to see a lot more than what we'd see on the film, because the films are pretty much carefully plotted out, and you're going to see one point of departure or approach. But with the game, you're going to be all over these things. So kind of design them around every point of view is going to be something spectacular to see. It's always something you think about in the design.
So still on the subject of ships then, Federation starships have traditionally followed similar design principles throughout the shows. But STO obviously is set 20 years after Nemesis, so we assume there's some freedom. Can we expect any radical design changes?
Oh, yeah. It's really been great to see. Ryan actually started with a version called the Excalibur, and he set a really beautiful tone for what the new kind of Federation starships are going to look like. So based on that, we did a whole new approach on starships. There's a whole kind of new array of designs. Because, you know, in Federation, you have the typical saucer, the two nacelles, and, yes, and the body. And trying to reconfigure those things, you kind of run out of ideas after a while. And so on this, we got to explore a whole new gambit of designs. And I don't know if hold on the last time.
Talk about the open saucer or keep that.
Okay, he says it's cool.
Okay.
what we did with to kind of make things different is just by accident on one of the sketches, we left the saucer open kind of like a donut, and it really kind of made a neat kind of new architectural statement. So we kind of carried that through a few of the designs, and it really takes it from what you've seen before and kind of pushes the designs a little bit further. And like what Ryan had done with the Excalibur is he kind of broke the very stylized kind of profile and made a really unique, I don't want to say gooseneck kind of look, but it has almost like a praying mantis sort of profile.
Is this a ship that we can see in the recent Starbase concept art that was released?
I don't know. Is that released in the Starbase?
There was a very small teaser there, really, that we...
No, I think they're keeping this one in tight, but when you see it, it's quite an impressive ship. So, he really has started a really neat look.
Right, so we'll really see some new designs that we really haven't seen before, then.
Yeah, very much so.
So building on that again, do you take game mechanics into account when you're designing ships, such as saucer separation or player upgrades? Obviously, on the Sacagawea, we noticed that you might be able to change and upgrade warp nacelles, for instance.
Yeah, the whole basis of all these ships is that you can add on different nacelles, different weaponry and stuff. What we've gone so far, well, at least from what I've done, is just the overall basic design. All the additions and stuff haven't been created yet. So basically we're still working on the basis of filling in the gaps of what ships are going to be what. Ryan has done a couple where he's done a couple versions where you see the different nacelle set up and stuff. But as far as extensively going into it, that's still yet to come.
Okay. So finally, I'll just ask, what do you consider the most challenging part of your work on STO so far?
The most challenging thing is working from home. I'm really used to working in an office, and I find that to be the biggest handicap. So they let me come up about every other week and spend a couple of days, and that's usually the best time that I have on the show, because then we can collaborate together. And for some reason, working from home, just the problems with the internet are horrendous. So technology's great except at my house. So it doesn't work that bad, but no, I'd much rather work in the office. So the biggest challenge is definitely is just the distance.
So is there anything you'd like to add in conclusion, John?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, I'd have to say it's one of the funnest things I've got to do. I think I've been doing movies and stuff for about 20 years, and this is definitely one of the highlights of all of that, just working with this crew and this team, so... it's not necessarily the film or the movie or what you're working on, but the crew you work with, and this is actually both. So I can enjoy working on Star Trek and with a great crew too.
Right. Well, John, it's been great talking to you. That really went very fast, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.